Good evening. If you want to turn to Genesis chapter 13, we will use that as our beginning place. Genesis 13, we will pick up our study from that terrible ending to chapter 12, where Abraham messes up royally in Egypt, he and his wife. We're going to use verse 1 as a way of reviewing what happened at the end of chapter 12. So we're just going to look at the words of coming out of Egypt. And I think this verse really connects more with the verses in chapter 12 than it does the beginning of a new chapter. So it says, so Abram went up from Egypt. Abram was, remember, very worried about what was going to happen in Egypt. There was a great famine and Judah, and so he goes to Egypt worrying about what the Egyptians are going to do to his wife. He is just convinced they are going to do the very worst thing, so he tells Sarai, why don't you just tell them we're brother and sister? Well, that plan goes awry pretty quick, where Sarai becomes the wife of Pharaoh, and Abram is blessed on her account, but then plagues start happening in Egypt because of this. Pharaoh eventually finds out and kicks Abram and his wife out of Egypt, and they never return there again. And notice this phrase, it says, he and his wife. So notice at the end of chapter 12, starting in verse 17 all the way through 20, you will find that phrase, his wife. It's in every single verse, and it's again in chapter 13, verse 1. He and his wife. So that seems to be the emphasis of this section. And so he and his wife flee Egypt, he and all that he had. Looking at chapter 12, verse 16, we learn that Abram at this point had a lot. He was a very blessed man, which is a fulfillment of the beginning of chapter 12 in verse 2, those promises that God made to Abram, among which he says, and I will make you a great nation and I will bless you. So God is fulfilling that in Abram. And then we are introduced to Lot again, which he has been absent, kind of in this section with dealing with Abram and Sarai in Egypt. So, kind of beg the question, why mention Lot? Why add Lot, that he went with him? If that seems to be, we already knew that, right? We already knew Lot was with him in Egypt. So why does it say, and Lot came out of Egypt with him? Well, Lot went, I think the answer is, this story is going to be about the foolish decision of Lot. And so he is being introduced into this story. And we're just going to look at the first 13 verses of chapter 13. And I want us to really think about the decisions that Lot is making for himself and for his family. And we will see that he does a very poor job of making a wise decision. Well, in verses 2 through 7, let's go ahead and read those verses together, which kind of serve as the prelude to the story. Now, Abram was very rich in livestock and silver and in gold, and he journeyed on from the Negev as far as Bethel to the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place where he had made an altar at the first. And there Abram called upon the name of the Lord. And Lot, who went with Abraham, also had flocks and herds and tents, so that the land could not support both of them dwelling together. For their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. At that time, the Canaanites and the Perizzites were dwelling in the land. I just want to notice with you a couple of things in these verses that I want to focus in on that should stand out. One, we learn in verse 4 that Abram called upon the name of the Lord. Well, he had already done that, right, in the previous chapter. He called upon the name of the Lord in this exact same spot. So why does he do it again? I think the answer is because how badly he messed up in Egypt. And remember, calling on the name of the Lord is not just a verbal, I'm calling on the name of the Lord. It is a a statement of, I'm going to worship only the Lord. I am calling on the Lord instead of calling on these other gods that the Canaanites or the Perizzites were worshiping at the time. And so this is him saying, I am going to worship the Lord. Remember how merciful the Lord had been towards him, even though he tried to do things on his own, tried to do things for himself in Egypt, and basically he lost a wife trying to do things on his own. So I think this is a reaffirming, you are my God. And so I want us to notice that in verse 4. And notice also that Abram's and Lot's possessions were so great, the Lord had blessed them so much, that the land could not have all of their possessions, all their livestock. And so there grew to be conflict, strife, between Abram's herdsmen and Lot's herdsmen. And so my guess is, and I'm kind of reading into the text a little bit, but my guess is their herdsmen would go to Abram, right, and say, Abram, look, Lot's herdsmen, they're being unfair to your cattle. And Lot's herdsmen would come to him, and there just grew this strife, this conflict that involved Abram and Lot. There was just not enough land to feed all of the cattle, so they were fighting over the pasture. So what do you do? Well, Abram and Lot separate. And this is because of Abram's idea. So because of this conflict between the herdsmen, notice what happens in verse 8. Then Abram said to Lot, let there be no strife between you and me and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if you take the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt in the direction of Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east. Thus they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley and moved his tent as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord. So Abram goes to Lot and makes the suggestion, we need to separate. Look, we have this whole land available to us, and if we continue to just stay together, then there's going to be conflict, there's going to be more strife that's going to happen. So the best thing for us to do is to go our own ways. So Abram tells Lot, before things get any worse, right, between our herdsmen, or possibly things get worse even between us, we need to make a break, right? We need to separate. And Abram lets Lot choose first. Even though Abram was older and basically took Lot, remember him being his nephew, taking him in when his father died, Abram says, I will let you choose first. And if you go to the right, I'll go to the left. If you choose the left, then I'll go to the right. And my guess is, and again, I don't know this to be true, but my guess is Abram probably insisted on this. My guess is Lot may have said, no, you should choose first, right? You're older, you've taken such good care of me, all these things. My guess is Abram said, I'd want you to choose which way to go. So what does Lot choose? Well, based on how good the land of the Jordan Valley was, and notice the description of it, it was like the garden of the Lord. That's about as the best you can get. And it was also like the land of Egypt, where they had probably just been, or at least just saw, and say, man, things were really good there, and I will choose Sodom. And I want us to notice the language that the writer uses here. Lot lifted up his eyes and saw. Where have we seen that before? If you can answer that, you got a great memory. Because we saw that all the way back in Genesis 3. Where the sin of Adam and Eve. Remember, that's exactly what Eve did. That Eve lifted up her eyes and saw that the fruit, whatever fruit it was good. It looked good. And that's exactly the same language that is being used for Lot. Lot looked up and saw that it was, can we just kind of transfer that word in, good. It was well watered. It was fantastic land. I want us to notice also that Lot just seems to be getting closer and closer to Sodom. In verse 11, it says he chose all the Jordan Valley. In verse 12, it says that Lot settled among the cities of the valley and moved his tent as far as Sodom. Now, if you jump to chapter 19, and in verse 1, it says, the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. Now, normally, when men especially were sitting at the gate of a city, that wasn't just, well, they have no place else to sit, so here's the gate. The gate of the city was where a lot of the judgments were made. If someone had a case, they would go to the gate of the city, and those would be where the elders of the city would judge a case. So may I just guess that maybe Lot is not only in Sodom, he is maybe has a prominent position in Sodom, being there at the gate. And I want us to notice this, if you're in chapter 19, notice how Lot just seems to be becoming more and more attached to Sodom. Verse 12 through 14. Then the men, these are the angels who told Lot, Sodom and Gomorrah is about to be destroyed. Okay, so it says, then the men said to Lot, have you anyone else here? Son-in-law, sons, daughters, or anyone you have in the city? Bring them out of the place. For we are about to destroy this place, because the outcry against its people has become great before the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. So Lot went out and said to his son-in-law, who were to marry his daughters, up, get out of this place, for the Lord is about to destroy the city. But he seemed to his sons-in-law to be jesting. Seems to me that Lot said the right words, but maybe the tone of voice that he was using just seemed like, oh, he's just kind of joking with us. And my proposal is, if Lot truly believed that, he is going to say that in such a way that they know Lot is not joking. Now, that may be nitpicking, but let's look at verses 15 through 17. As morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, up, take your wife and your daughters who are here, lest you be swept away in the punishment of the city. So what are the angels having to do? They are having to urge Lot and his family to leave. And that was Lot's job, right, to tell his family, his son-in-law. What is Lot's reaction? Well, verse 16 says, but he lingered. So the men seized him and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside of the city. And as they were brought them out, one said, escape for your life. Do not look back or stop anywhere in the valley. Escape to the hills, lest you be swept away. So if I'm reading this all correctly, it seems like Lot looked at the Jordan Valley and said, that looks like a fantastic place for me to live and for my livestock to grow. And then he moves into the cities and placed his tent as far as Sodom. In chapter 19, we see him in the city of Sodom. And when the angels say, get out of here, he lingered. My take on that is he really liked Sodom. So the angels grabbed him by the hands and forced him out of there. And said, you get out of here before you are swept away with this city. Now, if Lot wasn't attached, we do know that Lot's wife was. In verse 17, Lot's wife looked back, and that was the end of her. But Lot's wife behind him looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. Something that has nothing to do with my lesson, but every time I read this verse, I think of a story where someone said in the back of the auditorium, right where the clock was, they had this verse. Remember Lot's wife. I'm looking at you. I'm just making sure. And this counts. You know, that still counts. All right. So the Sodomites in verse 13 were extremely wicked. We learn from chapter 18 that God agreed not to spare the city, right? Abraham got God down from 50 all the way down to 10. If there are 10 righteous, then I will not destroy the city. I don't know if there were 2 righteous. I don't know how righteous Lot's wife or his 2 kids are if we read about them. There may have just been 1. In chapter 19, verses 4 and 5, we learn that terrible story about both the young and old men wanted to be with the 2 angels who Lot was keeping at his house to protect them from the people of the city. This was just the epitome of wickedness. But Abram said at the very beginning, why don't you choose where you go? If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. If you go to the left, then I will go to the right. I want us to think, what are the consequences of Lot's decision to move to this place where great wickedness was just rampant? 2 Peter, the text that was read for us this evening, gives us a little bit more of a glimpse inside what was happening to Lot. So again, I encourage you to look back at 2 Peter chapter 2. And 2 Peter Peter is just destroying the false prophets. And he is telling his audience what is going to happen to those false prophets who were among them. And he makes this very powerful in verses 4 through 10, saying, God is not going to spare these false prophets. Right? And he uses Lot as an example of how God can save the righteous. We'll begin in verse 6. If by turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to ashes, he condemned them to extinction, making them an example of what is going to happen to the ungodly. Now notice verse 7. And if he rescued righteous Lot, greatly distressed by the sensual conduct of the wicked, for as that righteous man lived among them day after day, he was tormenting his righteous soul over their lawless deeds that he saw and heard. Then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from trials and to keep the unrighteous under punishment until the day of judgment, and especially those who indulge in the lust and defiling passion and despise authority. Did you notice how Lot is described in this passage? Three times he is described as righteous, right? Righteous Lot, or his righteous soul, was just being tormented day after day. So what were the consequences of Lot's decision? And maybe we could say Lot's decision to stay, right, in Sodom. Well, his soul was just being tormented day after day after day. And what happened to his family? Well, we already read about what happened to his wife, who did not want to see the city destroyed and look back. But if you read the end of chapter 19, verses 30 through 38, what happened to the spiritual condition of his two daughters? Well, they saw, they heard all the things that Lot saw and heard living in that city. And they did a very disgraceful act, right, to their father, bearing children through him. And this is the last we hear about Lot and what happened to him. And I think if we were to take a poll or take a survey and say, what do you most remember about Lot? I guess most people would say, oh, that's Sodom and Gomorrah, right? Lot chose to live in Sodom and Gomorrah, and then it was destroyed, and Lot's wife looked back, and she turned into a pillar of salt. That's what we know about Lot. Well, Lot had made a lot of, I don't mean to say a lot, but Lot had made really good decisions up to that point, right? He agreed to be with Abram, with Sarai, trusting in the Lord. But what is he most known for? This poor decision. So what is this story about? One of many things. I think it helps us. It should help us to make better decisions in our lives. Maybe if Lot were here among us, he would preach this very powerfully, very boldly, and say, don't you make the same mistake I did. Don't you make the same mistake that killed my family. Don't you make the mistakes that led to the spiritual ruin of my two daughters. So how do we make wise decisions? How can we learn from Lot? I'll give you three takeaways. And this is really If you were to sum up the book of Proverbs, I think this would be it. The book of Proverbs is about two roads, right? One is the righteous way and one is the wicked way. The righteous way leads to life. The wicked leads to destruction. In so many of our decisions, we need to look beyond the immediate. Where does this decision lead to? Maybe big decisions in our life. Going to college. Or maybe, for some of us, helping people decide where they're going to go to college. Are there good churches in this area that you can be a help in, that you can be strengthened in? Or are you going to a great college that has your field that you really like and just no churches in the area? What about marriage? Is this person that you're thinking about marrying or thinking about dating, is this person going to help me love God more? Is this person going to help me get to heaven? Or is this person just really, really fun to be with and I think she's really pretty? Are you just thinking of the immediate? Or are you seeing where this decision could lead to? Financial decisions, right? Many people spend, and then they're just overcome with this massive amount of debt because of their poor decisions of just wanting more and more and not having that self-control. Well, those are big decisions, we might say. But what about the smaller ones? And maybe this gets down into the decisions you make every day. What habits are you forming? What habits are you getting into that maybe you need to change? Or how can you improve your day-to-day habits to get you more spiritually focused? And you have to ask this question, where does this lead to? Is this decision helping my spiritual well-being or is it not? Is this decision of listening to this radio show or watching this TV program or watching this movie or you fill in the blank, whatever decision, is this helpful to me? Is this helping me grow in the Lord? Where is this leading to? If I keep this up, where is it going to lead? Secondly, maybe Lot would tell us, you need to consider others. And Lot would be pretty hard on us in making sure that we are considering, especially those closest to us. How is Lot? Well, we read in 2 Peter, he was tormented, right? He was just tortured every day. His soul was seeing and hearing and listening to all this wickedness going on around him. But it says that he was righteous. Righteous Lot, his righteous soul. And how many times, I know this is so true for me, how many times do I think, I can get through this? Right? This won't bother me. I'll be okay. But then I fail to think about how is this decision going to affect my wife or my kids? How are they going to handle this situation that maybe I am putting them in or I am keeping them in? We need to always ask, how is this decision going to impact others? You remember Joshua's decision at the end of Joshua chapter 24? As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Well, how did that decision impact his family? I've been negative all evening, right? We can make very positive decisions that are going to have a great influence, a great impact on our family and our friends and those closest to us. making sure that you are spending the necessary time with your kids instead of at your hobbies or at your job, or you're making sure I'm going to cancel some things so I can make sure my family's taken care of. The decision to lead your family closer to God is always going to be one that's going to have a positive impact. And maybe thirdly, Lot would tell us what you need to do above all other things. Seek God first and seek His kingdom. Cling to God. James chapter 4 and verse 7 says, submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. One word that kept coming up in my mind as I was looking at this story again, was the word compromise. How many compromises do you think Lot made in making this decision? Well, I'll just get a little bit closer. It's not a sin to like good things, right? This place is an excellent land. Nothing wrong with this land. This is a great land. But how many compromises was he making in putting his family in a tough, terrible situation? How many compromises do we make? And we say, well, this is not really a sin. This is not really a terrible thing. And I think we're asking the wrong question, right? If we're asking the question, is this okay? Is this a sin? Or maybe the question needs to be, is this going to help me run? Right, is this going to help me get closer to the Lord? We are told in Hebrews 12, run the race. Right? Fix your eyes on Jesus. Instead of asking, is this okay? Is this going to help me cling to God? And if we're asking that question, we're going to throw away all these questions about how close can I get to sin. Jesus put it this way in Matthew chapter 16. Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay each person according to what he has done. Truly I say to you, there are some standing here who will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. What happened to Lot? I think among other things, he became so attached to the nice, wonderful things of this world that he forgot his purpose in life. And that was to please God, to glorify Him. If we are to gain life, the thing that Jesus tells us we have to do, if we want to get the most out of this life, we need to lose it. For whoever loses his life for my sake will gain. Let's learn from Lot. Let's make sure whatever decisions we make, whether big, whether great or small, we're asking the right questions. And we're asking the questions, how can this help me? How can this help my family? How can this help my friends glorify and serve the Lord better? I believe that's what Lot would drive into us this evening. If there is anyone here who knows they need to put on Christ, that maybe they have made some poor decisions, they need to repent from those, they need the prayers, whatever your need is, make it this night that you say from here on out, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. If there's anyone who needs to come, we invite you to do that now as we stand and sing.